Our next guest is a reporter for The Oregonian who wrote the story about Oregon State pitcher Luke Heimlich that appeared in yesterday's edition. If you haven't read it, catch it online, OregonLive.com. Just click sports. Follow on Twitter. The handle is at Danny J. Moran. We welcome in Danny Moran. Danny, appreciate the time. How are things going?
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
So let's start at the core, because you did not set out to do a story about convicted felons on scholarship in the Pac-12. So if you could kind of take us through the process that led you to make this disturbing discovery about Heimlich and, you know, this crime he committed as a teenager.
Sure. So for people who maybe are just coming to the story, Luke Heimlich was a pitcher for Oregon State for the past three years now. Was a solid pitcher, a regular part of either the bullpen or the rotation over the past 2 years, and pretty quickly this year it was apparent that he was becoming one of the best pitchers in the country. Statistically, his ERA is still by far the best in the country. He's 11-1. He's obviously also surrounded by a great team, both defensively and offensively. And so around March, he began starting to compile information that would go into a profile. I think that really picked up in early May. I know I sat down with him for one-on-one interviews twice in the month of May, and it was on May 18th when I gathered pretty much everything that I had, that just, you know, on background search court record, just making sure there was nothing we had missed along the process, and in fact did find that he had failed to register as a sex offender. I should say he failed to report. He did register, in fact, at some point after coming to Oregon State, but there's a reporting process required by law that qualifies when you either change addresses or also an annual update for your birthday. He had missed his most recent reporting requirement. He was cited for a misdemeanor in April, and we learned about it on May 18th. And there it was a process of figuring out what the case involved, over the circumstances of the case, and that involves requesting documents related to the case in Washington for the most serious crimes involving juveniles. Those court records are not sealed, and so we were able to get the documents related to the case file, and those came on May 30th. So that would be Tuesday of last week, one day after Oregon State reached the NCAA tournament. From then, once we learned what the details of the case were, it was reporting that myself and Brad Schmidt, investigative reporter with the Oregonian, did, involving looking at the case, reaching out to Luke Heimlich himself, seeing if he wanted to speak about it or have a representative speak on his behalf. Did not hear back from either. Pat Casey declined to comment. We talked to necessary people at Oregon State, and as you saw in kind of the final piece, also did an examination of policies in the Pac-12, in the NCAA, and at Oregon State for allowing student-athletes with prior felony convictions to play.
Yeah, along those lines, and I know we live in kind of a minimal attention society where people scan headlines, jump to conclusions. So as far as the specific, I guess, a summarization of his case, what did he stand accused of, and what was the outcome as far as what he voluntarily entered a guilty plea for?
What he was accused of by a female family member who were declining to identify beyond that, in the interest of protecting her identity.
Sure.
Accused Luke Heimlich of molesting her over a period of time ranging from when she was 4 years old to 6 years old. She reported it to her mother. Eventually was relayed to authorities who interviewed her. Luke Heimlich was between 13 and 15 at the time of accusations. He was eventually charged in Pierce County in Washington. So for people who are curious, that's around Tacoma. He's from Puyallup, Washington. He was charged with two counts of felony child molestation in the first degree. That's a Class A felony in Washington. He was on March 29th and 12th. He was, at that point, a sophomore, he was in high school as a freshman, and
right.
So he was in the process of eventually going to transfer to a new high school. He was homeschooled, actually, at that point, and was going to transfer to a new high school to enroll full-time. And in August, He ended up pleading guilty to one count. The count was from when he was 15 years old and the victim was six, and the other count was dropped as part of the plea bargain.
All right. Now, I think an issue that's kind of striking a lot of people also hit me. I mean, we live in the information age, so teams or schools going through the reporting process, the recruiting process, unless there's been a case that maybe has received publicity, if I'm correct, the NCAA, the school, the conference, there's no policy requiring coaches or administrations ask potential recruits if they committed a felony, which in the real world we see on basic resumes.
Correct. The NCAA does not have a policy. They defer to conferences and schools. The Pac-12 recently instituted a ban on transfers with severe misconduct issues that don't to re-enroll in their prior institutions. Oregon State was actually at the forefront of that after the revelations around Brenda Tracy, who is a survivor of sex abuse that occurred at the hands of Oregon State players back in 1998. After that story came out, Oregon State pushed for this reform from the Pac-12, but as far as accepting recruits out of high school, correct, there is no formal policy from the conference about it. They have a ban on accepting any recruits with prior felony convictions. I will say that that specificity of that rule does allow for them to take on junior college players.
Right.
So in that sense, it's basically an opportunity to prove yourself at a different place and then come, but not directly out of high school. So at Oregon State, yeah, in this circumstance, no, they do not ask applicants about prior felony convictions. And the issue here as far as registered sex offenders is a little different because they do coordinate with the Oregon State Police to determine whether or not there are sex offenders registered in Benton County, where Oregon State is. And then they address meeting with that individual through different departments in the university. We've learned since the story came out, because it was, you know, we asked repeatedly about who in the athletic department is informed. We were told multiple times that nobody was required to know, that it's since changed, that a deputy athletic director is supposed to be informed if that circumstance involves a student athlete. But we don't know any of the specifics at this point about Luke Heimlich and when those in the athletic department knew, when anyone in the university knew, or when anyone on the team knew.
Talk with Danny Moran of the Oregonian. I have a basic question for those who have cited the timing as a journalist and a reporter, regardless of the date or time or who's playing. If you come across a documented fact in the course of researching for a story, don't you have a professional obligation to pass that along? And would you face maybe repercussions from the powers that be if you deliberately left out such an important fact?
Yeah, two things I'll say as far as the timing. One, Oregon State was the consensus number one team in the country for virtually the entire season. This is not a good story in any respect.
Right.
So there is no real good time to report this. As I said earlier, you know, it wasn't until May 18th that we were aware that anything along these lines possibly existed. It wasn't until May 30th, after the regular season was over, that we received any kind of documentation. And that's fairly typical, unfortunately, as far as processing of records requests and the ability for records to arrive. So in that sense, you're right, there was no real time. Once we felt that we had a completed story with time, it would have been, in our view, irresponsible to hold off on something that we felt was complete based on the timing of any specific game or any specific tournament. And yeah, once the issue of the misdemeanor citation for failure to report and update his registration came to my attention, I went to editors and just let them know, and we proceeded from there. So that's the basic procedure for how we kind of went about it.
Sure.
And that this went all the way up the ladder as far as having discussions about how to report this and how to make this decision.
All right, a couple of final thoughts for Danny Moran. And, of course, when we have a segment of our society who like to chastise the Fourth Estate when the narrative goes against their personal beliefs or agenda, what do you say to those who are kind of challenging your motives that you did this story for clicks or because the Super Regional was here? And was it, obviously, it wasn't for any reason other than this is what a true professional journalist does.
You know, I respect the right for everyone to have their opinion. I understand this is an incredibly sensitive story. This is an incredibly sensitive time. We had those discussions repeatedly over the course of the weeks that we were reporting the story. As I said, there's no good time to report this story. There's no good time for this news to occur. And once we felt we had the story fully reported, we did it. I mean, as far as the potential criticism that this was done to align with the NCAA tournament, I will say that a story on Luke Heimlich as a pitcher was intended to come around the time of the NCAA tournament, given the season, or grade of the season, I should say, profile on his rise and nothing beyond that, but also to learn more about his background. Once this information came to us, it was relevant, and we had to pursue it. And at that point, we had no prior agenda, and we still have no prior agenda. It was to follow the facts where they led, and unfortunately, these are the facts of the matter.
No question about it. Listen, Danny, I know you're getting pulled at in a bunch of different directions. I really appreciate your time. And, on behalf of folks who work in media, we really appreciate your honesty, your accuracy, and your top-flight reporting on a critical story like this.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
All right. You have a good one.